97.9 FM, WCHL, and the UNC College of Journalism and Mass Communication presents Sports Focus with Charlie Tuggle. Sports Focus is dedicated to in-depth examinations of issues of overarching importance in the sports world. Each week, we'll discuss problems and look for solutions to problems in professional, collegiate, and amateur sports. From Carroll Hall on the UNC campus, here's your host, journalism professor Charlie Tuggle.
Welcome to Sports Focus. Our topic today, the case of Corey Mock at the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga. Our guest, Corey's father, former UNC wrestling coach C.D. Mock. C.D., let's set the stage without getting too far into the weeds with the legal ruling, because it's quite long and quite complicated. But basically, let's just try to set the stage. A young woman accused your son, both students at UT Chattanooga, of sexual assault. That case went before an administrative judge who initially ruled that Corey was not guilty. What happened after that?
She basically changed her mind.
The administrative judges who we're talking about.
That's correct. Apparently, the alleged victim, or accuser, had a meeting, a private meeting with Chancellor Angle at UTC. And I only know this from what I've been told. Obviously, I don't have any direct knowledge. But apparently, Chancellor Angle requested the judge advocate to reconsider, I think is the legal term. And she did. And she changed her opinion with no new information, no new facts, no new anything.
According to the court document, that's exactly what the judge, the appellate judge, found, was that of the 49 items of fact in the initial ruling, none of those changed, but the opinion did. From this same initial judge. So Corey is expelled from UTC based on that changed ruling. There is an injunction that allows him to take his final exams, which he does.
Wait a minute. You missed a point there. We requested a stay so that we could appeal to the chancellor of the school, which is the next step in UTC's process.
Okay.
So... just wanted to correct you there. We appealed to the chancellor, and then subsequently the chancellor in December upheld her ruling. And he did that, I understand, a day after UTC was notified that the alleged victim had filed a Title IX complaint.
Okay, so after that is when there was the situation of, is Corey going to get to take his final exams or not?
Correct.
And the
chancellor did that the day before his final exams.
And he was allowed to take the final exams, and then what?
We ran into court, got a stay for him to take his final exams, and then technically he was done. So we had to go back and get a stay to get him back into school in January, which we got.
And so what has happened since January?
But he's been in school and taking classes and was not allowed to wrestle. But we've been in appeal. And the appeal, the third process of the UTC system, is an appeal to the Chancery Court. Gets a little confusing with Chancery and Chancellor. Basically, it's a judge, state appeals judge. And this is the first appeal outside of the school itself, but still within the school process. This appeal has a very limited scope. The judge's responsibility is to rely on the judge advocate and the chancellor's findings with regard to the actual event. However, her job is to make sure that the process went correctly and didn't affect anyone's rights or anything like that.
All right. So just again, to make sure everyone's clear, the chancellor is a male. The judge advocate is a female, and the appellate judge is a female.
Correct.
Correct. All right. And again, just to make sure we're all on the same page, we agree that rape is wrong.
Of course.
All right. And we...
Not just rape, sexual assault, anything against anyone's will. Yes.
Any kind of sexual assault. Okay.
Yeah.
We also agree that there should be due process. Okay, so we're on the same page then. Okay, so this ruling, which I've read, it's pretty lengthy, but basically, if I'm reading it correctly, the appellate judge takes the chancellor to task.
Well, I don't want to say that. I mean, I don't know that it took him to task. I'm not sure what that means. I mean, she overturned him and certainly indicated that a number of things went on that shouldn't have gone on. And I think exposed a lot of what I've been saying for the last year on my blog, that colleges are out of control with regard to this issue. We can argue it's not totally their fault, it's the government's fault, but bottom line is they're the ones that are violating, in many cases, young men's constitutional rights and right to due process, and it's wrong. It's just flat wrong. There's no question about it. People have fought and died for, the right to due process, the right to be innocent until you are proven guilty. And colleges are trying to rewrite the Constitution. And in my son's case, and in many, many other young men's case, many more than you are aware. I mean, I get calls every other week from parents. I have for the last year, who don't want to come out. They're afraid to come out because of Google. They're afraid to give their kid's name. They can't afford an attorney. It's $20,000-$30,000 to fight one of these cases, and they don't have, have that kind of money to spend. And so what do? They have no choice. They walk away. It's a horribly unfair process that is, in my view, is a violation of many young men's constitutional rights.
Sports Focus will return right after this. Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking with former UNC wrestling coach C.D. Mock about the case of his son, Corey Mock, at the University of Tennessee, Chattanooga, involving a charge which an appellate court has basically ruled in Corey's favor, that charge had come up against him, sexual assault. C.D., you talked about young men who might be afraid to come forward, or parents who are afraid to come forward because of Google Land. And that's part of the reasoning why folks are saying, women who are indeed victims of sexual assault, they are afraid to come forward. So, I know you're suffering one end of the spectrum, but there are others who suffer the other end. And how do we come to a point that we're giving due process and due consideration to both sides?
Yeah, it's a real problem, and I don't have the solution. I never claimed to have the solution. I have a daughter. I have a wife. I've been at the other side of this. I'm not going to go into detail with that, but I've been at the other side of this. My daughter was sexually assaulted while she was in college at UNC, and we've been at the other side of this. So I know, believe me, I have great sympathy. I understand. It's a real problem. We have got to make sure that we are protecting women in every way possible, and rapists and men who sexually assault need to go to jail, need to be held accountable. But we can't change the laws and create a whole new class of victims by removing people's due process, right to due process. We can't do that. It's the wrong way to handle it. I don't have the solution. I don't know how to handle it. I think there, the main problem with no means no, as I understand it from reading a lot of the feminists and some of the people that write about it, the biggest problem is when a young lady is incapacitated and can't say no. That seems to be the big push for this affirmative consent standard. And, I get that. Somebody puts a drug in a young lady's drink or whatever, it's a problem. I think the first line of defense needs to be parents, and we need to be educating our daughters, and I have one, so I'm walking like I talk. We need to educate our daughters to be wolves, not sheep. We need to make them aware that, you can't depend on the great shepherd to come along and protect you when something goes wrong. Don't let something go wrong. Do everything in your power not to have something go wrong. Protect, watch over. If you have a drink, watch over it. If you don't go to a party at 2 a.m. And see, a lot of people don't want to hear that because they feel like they should have, and why should a woman be afraid if a man's not afraid? Well, it's because they're different. They're different. We're not talking about men being afraid of getting raped by women. That's not the issue here. So we need to be realistic about it if we're going to come up with good, solid solutions and stop pretending like there's no difference between men and women, in my opinion.
All right, C.D., let's go back to that issue of yes means yes, and how do you come up with how does the young man come to the conclusion that the young woman is saying yes? you know, are we looking for a signed affidavit that, yes, I am willing to have sex with you, or, you know, according...
Affirmative consent is verbal consent only. It is very clear. It is verbal consent only. And it is not just verbal consent once. It is verbal consent through every stage of the process. It is verbal consent. It's an absolutely unrealistic, ridiculous solution to this problem. Affirmative consent doesn't make any sense for that reason. It's not practical. It's not going to happen. The definition at UTC was a verbal consent or acts that are unmistakable in their meaning to a reasonable person. I'm not sure what's wrong with that. That, to me, is a reasonable definition of consent. You know, and we can all sit and imagine acts that a woman would take. You know, if a girl is out and she's in a bar and or she's on a party or wherever she is, and we're talking about a college campus, of course, that's what I'm focused on, and this situation happens. I mean, I coached young men for many years. I know what's going on college campuses. I don't think most of the public realizes what's going on. But, the real problem here is alcohol more than anything else. And the use of alcohol. And when a woman drinks and gets impaired, there's a point where she becomes incapacitated, and at that point it becomes rape.
In this case, that was the key question. Was she incapacitated? Did she have the wherewithal to give consent? And according to the initial ruling from the judge advocate, she was not impaired.
Well, she was not impaired by alcohol because, I mean, she even says that she only had two drinks. The people that were witnesses there that said she was not intoxicated, I don't think intoxication was the issue. She's suggesting that she was drugged, and she did not suggest. In fact, she said at the original hearing that she did not believe my son drugged her. Mm-hmm. She believed someone there that night drugged her. I understand there was a test that came up negative. I don't know. I'm just saying in her case, it was not, I don't think the issue is that alcohol. The issue was she was suggesting that there was some other drug involved, just to set the record straight.
All right. And the appellate judge basically said that through this whole process, UTC... the chancellor specifically erroneously shifted the burden of proof onto Corey. Corey had to prove that he did have this consent, and the judge said this procedure is flawed and untenable. If due process,
unconstitutional.
Yeah.
And it's not just UTC, it's UNC, it's most of the schools that are out there right now. They're all treating the accused the same. They are deemed to be guilty until they prove themselves innocent. It's analogous to anything happening in our legal system. So, you know, if we want to talk about things like, well, women are afraid to, you know, they're reluctant to go to the law because of this or that or whatever. I get that. That's a problem. But right now, that's the best alternative, because when you go to the law, as just experienced by us, your constitutional rights are upheld, and that's more important than anything. So, I don't have a solution, but there's no doubt in my mind that this should be a legal matter, not an educational matter. And I've been saying this for years, and it's one of the reasons I think I got fired. I've been very, very critical of the honor system at UNC and the way it deals with behavioral issues. UNC is an educational institution. It should focus on educational issues. If somebody goes uptown and drinks too much and gets in a fight, why is UNC involved in the adjudication of that matter? They shouldn't be, in my opinion. And I've been very vocal about that. I don't think the educational institution should be in the justice system. And they've put themselves there, and the government's put them there. And it's a quick answer solution to this problem that is a horrible solution.
Sports Focus will be right back. Welcome back to Sports Focus. We're talking with C.D. Mock, the former wrestling coach at UNC, about the case against his son, which Corey has now been deemed not guilty by an appellate court in Tennessee, Chattanooga, of sexual assault. I want to read, C.D., one line from the judge's ruling. As noted by the UTC chancellor, her silence, meaning the accuser, the accuser's silence does not constitute yes. By the same reasoning, it does not constitute no. That, I think, is a very important part of this judge's ruling, that just because she didn't say yes verbally, that doesn't mean that she was saying no, because as the judge points out, there were actions that she took that would indicate to a reasonable person that this was something she was doing willingly.
Yeah, I agree.
So how important is that particular statement?
Yeah. I think it's critical, and it's particularly critical to protect women who can't say no. They're silent because they're incapacitated, and they can't say no. You know, this is where the no means no standard runs into a problem in when you deal with incapacitation. But I think her statement was totally accurate.
All right, you've mentioned a couple of times getting fired because of this. Do you think that's why you're no longer the wrestling coach at UNC?
No doubt in my mind. You know, no question in my mind, and it would take a lot longer than the time you have for me to lay that out, and nor do I want to. But yeah, I do believe that. Look, I love UNC. I love the people at UNC. UNC is a great institution. My heart is in UNC. I have great problems with the current leadership at UNC, both in the university and the athletic department. There's just a lot of political correctness, a lot of you know, I guess what we would call modern progressiveness going on, and I think in leadership, you know, what I respect is loyalty. I respect people who stand up. I've spent 20 years. People ask me, why are you doing this? Why'd you do this? You got fired. Why would you do this? You know, being on a blog, you're upsetting people. I mean, why would I do this? I spent 20 years of my life teaching young men, trying to teach young men to stand up for what they believe in. To not be afraid to stand up, even if it's going to cost you something, and it usually does, stand up for what you believe. So I had a lot of people watching me. And, you know, at this point, I'm going to bail on everything I've been saying. I mean, it wasn't even a possibility. I saw an injustice. My wife and I felt very strongly that we needed to defend our son in something we felt that he did not break the law on. Although we very much are disappointed in some of his choices. He's not innocent entirely on this. He did not break the law or sexually assault this young lady, and we felt like we needed to be defended. But yes, I was very vocal because I believe there was something wrong done, and there wasn't anybody else standing up. You know, he was all alone.
CD, let's go back to the particulars of this case, because I think it's very important what the judge laid out. And again, she said, in such cases, it can be brutal for a victim to endure being sexually assaulted. But the rights of the accused must also be ensured. And you can understand, if there's a national focus on sexual assault on campus, you can understand why campus administrators would perhaps overreact on one side of the argument. I get that. And if, you know, the numbers for how many what's the percentage of false accusations, they range anywhere from 5% to 50%, depending on, you know, who you read. But let's say that if it is as much as 50%, that means 50% of them actually were assaulted. So, yes, we have to protect our girls, but can we protect our guys at the same time if they did not break the law?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's a matter of, can we legislate morality? I mean, is this the way to handle the problem, by punishment, by legislation that makes people accountable? Certainly one way, and it certainly should be part of it. But there are better ways. As I said, alcohol is the big problem. No one's presenting any solutions to how to deal with that. Administrators need to take it much more seriously, because between alcohol and hookups going on campus, as opposed to dating, a lot of morality is out of control, and I think that's a much bigger problem than how we're trying to address it.
And that does it for this edition of Sports Focus. Thanks to our guest, C.D. Mock. Thanks to engineer Gary Kirk. And as always, thanks to you for listening. Cheers!
Thanks to Richard Southall, Mark Nagel, and Deborah Southall of the College Sport Research Institute at the University of South Carolina for their research and guidance, and for access to CSRI's international network of sources. Sports Focus is a production of UNC's College of Journalism and Mass Communication.